Hello, and welcome to this week's RTD Reviews. I'm Virginia Voice volunteer Jennifer Faison, reading recent reviews from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. As is our custom, I'll get started by reading from the Thursday, April 18th, this weekend edition of the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and we'll hear the top five events this weekend. Dubbed one of the best races in the country, the UCROPS Monument Avenue 10K is back in Richmond for the 25th year. On Saturday, UCROPS Monument Avenue 10K. A springtime tradition, the UCROPS Monument Avenue 10K is back in Richmond for its 25th year, inviting runners, joggers, and casual strollers alike to take part in a 6.2-mile trek along the city's historic street, featuring more than 30 live bands, DJs, porch parties, and costumes to keep you moving. The event begins at 8:30 a.m. at West Broad and North Harrison Streets. Registration is $60. You can find additional information at 804-285-9495 or at www.sportsbackers.org. On Friday, Chelsea Handler, comedian, television host, and New York Times best-selling author Chelsea Handler is headed to the Altria Theater. Doors open at 6 p.m. The show starts at 7 p.m. This event is located at the Altria Theater, which is at 6 North Laurel Street. Tickets range from $45 to $95. You can find additional information by dialing 800-514-3849 or at etix.com. On Saturday, Ode to Bluegrass at Hardywood. Dance and sway the day away at Hardywood's annual Ode to Bluegrass, featuring live performances by Crooked Creek, Misfits, Laurel Hell's Ramblers, The Ruckus Band, and more. Food options include Hardywood Brathaus, El Guapo, Salty's Lobster, and Colonial Kettle Corn. This event is located at the Hardywood Park West Creek location, which is at 820 Sanctuary Trail Drive. The music starts at 2 p.m. This event is free to attend, pay as you go. You can find additional information by dialing 804-418-3548 or at hardywood.com. Also on Saturday, Broadberry 10th Anniversary Block Party. Celebrate the Broadberry's 10th anniversary with a block party featuring live performances from Nashville bluegrass band The Infamous String Dusters and Richmond-based bands like No BS Brass Band, Pray Bear Trio, and The Mitras. Doors open at 4 p.m. Music starts at 4:30 p.m. The indoor after party starts at 10 p.m. The Broadberry is located at 2729 West Broad Street. Tickets range from $20 to $40. You can find additional information by dialing 804-353-1888 or at www.thebroadberry, and Berry is spelled Berry.com. And the last of our top five events for this weekend from the Richmond Times-Dispatch, this weekend section, is Samurai at VMFA, which opens Saturday. One of the largest collections in the world, Samurai armor from the collection of Anne and Gabriel Barbier Mueller will open at the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts. Travel back in time for a look at Japan's exquisitely crafted samurai armor and experience samurai history. Exhibit open during museum hours daily from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and until 9 p.m. Wednesday through Friday. Virginia Museum of Fine Arts is located at 200 North Arthur Ashe Boulevard. Tickets are $15. You can find additional information by dialing 804-340-1400 or at vmfa.museum. Let's move on to a review from the This Weekend section titled Civil War Declares Victory at Box Office by Lindsay Barr of the Associated Press. Alex Garland's provocative Civil War didn't only ignite the discourse. The film also inspired audiences to go to the cinemas this weekend, where it surpassed expectations and earned $25.7 million in ticket sales in North America, according to studio estimates on Sunday. It's the biggest R-rated opening of the year to date and a record for A24, the studio behind films like Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, and The Iron Claw. Civil War also unseated Godzilla vs. King Kong from its perch atop the box office. The Titan movie from Warner Brothers had held the number one spot for the past 2 weeks. Civil War, starring Kirsten Dunst, Wagner Moura, and Kaylee Spaney, is frontline journalists in the near future covering a devastating conflict in the U.S. and trying to make their way to Washington, D.C. The story, written by Garland, who is also the mind behind Ex Machina and Annihilation, imagines a U.S. in which California and Texas have united against a president who has disbanded the FBI and given himself a third term. Though entirely fictional, Civil War has been inspiring debates since the first trailer that have extended beyond the musings of film critics and traditional reviews. This weekend, the New York Times ran two opinion pieces related to the movie, one by Stephen Marsh and the other by Michelle Goldberg. There were also pieces on CNN and Politico. Going into the weekend, projections pegged the film to debut in the $15 to $24 million range. The studio said Civil War overperformed in markets from L.A. to El Paso. The data analytics company Entelligence reported that the film has attracted over 1.7 million patrons this weekend and that the top three markets were Los Angeles, New York, and Dallas. The title alone is enough to spark a conversation in a year where the political discourse is top of mind, said Paul Duragabedian, the senior media analyst for Comscore, and they couldn't have picked a better date. This movie is perfectly timed in a month that is very quiet. The film opened on 3,838 screens in the U.S. and Canada, including IMAX. It's the most expensive movie that the studio has ever made, with a production budget of $50 million, which does not account for millions spent on marketing and promotion. IMAX showings of Civil War, which was playing on 400 of the large format screens, accounted for $4.2 million, or 16.5% of the domestic total. Reviews have been largely positive. It's currently at 83% on Rotten Tomatoes, with a 77% audience score. Its cinema score was a B-, which has sometimes indicated that word of mouth might not be strong going forward. But that might not be the case with Civil War, which doesn't have a tremendous amount of competition over the next few weeks until The Fall Guy opens on May 3rd. You have to take all the metrics together, including the competitive landscape, Digger-Badian said. But it is a notable win for the studio, which doesn't always open films nationwide out of the gates. Before Civil War, A24's biggest debut was the Ari Aster horror Hereditary, which opened to $13.6 million in 2018. This isn't destined to be a $200 million global blockbuster, but it's a very high-profile win for A24, Digger-Badian said. They're a studio that pushes the envelope. They're a brand associated with a certain level of quality and filmmaking expertise, pushing boundaries and taking risks. It's well-earned over the years. Second place went to Godzilla vs. Kong, The New Empire, which earned $15.5 million in its third weekend to bring its running domestic total to nearly $158 million. Another Empire movie, Sony's Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, took third place in its fourth weekend with $5.8 million. It's now at $160 million worldwide. Rounding out the top five was Universal and DreamWorks Kung Fu Panda 4, in fourth with $5.5 million in weekend six, and Dune Part 2 with $4.3 million in its seventh weekend. Dune 2 has now earned $272 million domestically. This weekend also saw the box office year-to-date comparisons take a big hit. Last year, the Super Mario Bros. Movie brought in over $92 million in its second weekend in theaters. On the same weekend in 2023, the top 10 accounted for over $142 million, compared to this year's $68.4 million. The year-to-date is back down to 16% after seeing some recovery with the success of Dune Part 2. The box office has been a seesaw, Digger-Badian said, but we all knew this was going to be a rough month for comps because of Mario. Estimated ticket sales for Friday through Sunday at U.S. and Canadian theaters, according to Comscore. Final domestic figures will be released Monday. Number 1, Civil War, $25.7 million. Number 2, Godzilla vs. King Kong, The New Empire, $15.5 million. Number 3, Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, $5.8 million. Number 4, Kung Fu Panda 4 at $5.5 million, and number 5, Dune Part 2 at $4.3 million. Here's another review titled Kevin Hart Returning to Richmond This Year from Staff Reports. After last year's successful stop in Richmond, comedian Kevin Hart will return to Richmond's Altria Theater on his Acting My Age tour. Pre-sale tickets go on sale at 10 a.m. on Wednesday. Tickets range from $78.50 to $308.50 and can be purchased at altriatheater.com and via eTix, that's ETIX.com. You can also purchase tickets at the Altria Theater box office, which is located at 6 North Laurel Street. Last year, Hart stopped in Richmond on his Reality Check tour and visited his favorite Richmond restaurant, Mama J's, for soul food. In the past, he's praised Mama J's fried chicken, collard greens, and mac and cheese. The tour kicks off in New York and New Jersey in June. Other big-name comedians headed to Richmond this year include Chelsea Handler this Friday and Jim Gaffigan on September 20th, both at the Altria Theater. Now we'll head over to the Richmond Times-Dispatch Sunday, April 14th, Culture Section, Books and Authors page for some book reviews. First up, Classical History Told with Dark Humor by Donna Edwards of the Associated Press. Best friends Lampo and Gellin are potters by trade, but their souls are filled with poetry. It's 412 B.C., and the city of Syracuse doesn't know what hit it when these two hatch up the best, worst idea. They'll put on a play using Athenian prisoners of war who are starving to death down in the rock quarry. If the googly eyes on the cover don't make it apparent, Ferdia Lennon's knockout debut novel, Glorious Exploits, is a hilarious. In fact, it's loaded with dark humor literally from page one. Never before has history been such a riot and so indelibly endearing. The book is crass, quick-witted, and dialogue-heavy, making it a quick read to boot. Born in Dublin, Lennon infuses the story with a delightfully Irish lilt, complete with very Irish cursing that gives the whole thing a kind of bizarre yet familiar approachability. The author's also applied his deep interest and knowledge in classical history to give us exactly the context needed to set the stage for the epic tale he'll tell. And, while I'm sure history buffs will get some extra layers of entertainment, rest assured that even for someone like me who is woefully bad at history and has never taken much interest in Greek or Roman stories, it's still a hoot. Glorious Exploits is a story largely built as if on happenstance. The directors in the making stumble on children playing in the street with valuable armor they found that Lampo and Galen can then sell to fund their project. Later, they happen to come across an old man singing for money in the streets whose story strikes Galen deeply, but that Lampo only sees as a story, driving a wedge between the two. But their friendship and the story itself is stronger than this. Watching them morph and grow with the project's progression is deeply gratifying and relieving. If at first Lampo seems almost unbearably awful sometimes, fret not, because it gets better. As Galen said, it's poetry we're doing. It wouldn't mean a thing if it were easy. The main characters are sympathetic and their goals admirable, certainly feeding the Athenians is humanitarian, even if gruffly so. But before long, I found myself also rooting for their success in every venture that branches off from the play, from Galen's search for happiness to Lampo's courting of Lyra, the new girl down at their favorite watering hole. All told, the project is so much more than putting on a couple of Euripides tragedies. It's life-giving, and it challenges the barriers thrown up between us and them. I never thought I could be so enraptured reading a book describing a play as a performance, especially a tragedy I didn't know. Yet, somehow, when we finally get to the big day, Lennon has infused the pages with nervous anticipation that's closer to reading a thriller than a historical comedy. Glorious Exploits is a celebration of stories and storytelling, lavishing the emotional power of the arts, and one that's especially apt in dealing with the fallout of the Peloponnesian War, at a time when, in our present reality, fighting has left cities in rubble and millions of people facing starvation. Lennon offers a window through which we see past the fog of messy politics and view these tragedies with empathy. Glorious Exploits by Ferdia Lennon runs 304 pages. It's available from Henry Holt and Company and costs $27. This was a review titled Classic History Told with Dark Humor by Donna Edwards of the Associated Press. Here's another book review titled Trilogy of Mobster-Turned-Tycoon Completed by Bruce DeSilva of the Associated Press. Years ago, when novelist Don Winslow first read Asyclius, he recognized the Greek father of literary tragedies had explored every major theme found in modern crime fiction, from murder, vengeance, and corruption to power, justice, and redemption. He became obsessed, he said recently, with the idea of retelling the ancient stories in a modern crime fiction trilogy. For the last 30 years, while churning out a succession of books that include some of the best crime novels ever written, he worked on the ambitious project in fits and starts, and sometimes despairing, but never giving up. City in Ruins marks the conclusion of his saga of Rhode Island mobster turned Las Vegas gambling tycoon Danny Ryan. If Winslow is to be believed, it is also the last novel he will ever write as he turns his considerable talents to the political activism. The trilogy opened with City on Fire in 2021 as Ryan and a handful of allies fled Providence, Rhode Island after losing a gang war to the Italian mafia. It continued with City of Dreams in 2023 as Ryan tried and failed to build a new life in Los Angeles. As City in Ruins opens, we find an older Ryan operating as a silent partner in two Las Vegas casinos, a man who was once a dock worker and underworld strong arm in Providence is now rich beyond his dreams, but he still wants more. Why, he wonders, is it greed? No, not that. Be honest with yourself, he said. You want more money because money is power and power is safety. And you can never be safe enough. Not in this world. After all, the Italian mob and the FBI are still out there. Hell, they're bent on revenge and or justice for the crimes he's committed, for the people he has killed. So Danny overreaches. He schemes to purchase a prime piece of real estate on the Las Vegas Strip to build a fabulous gambling resort, putting him in conflict with the city's power brokers, including a rival casino owner who has mob connections of his own. Soon, the old enemies also are circling. Danny does what he can to prevent the power struggle from turning violent, but through a series of miscalculations, bullets start flying, endangering not only his gambling empire, but his life and the lives of those he loves. While City in Ruins can be read as a standalone, readers would be best served by reading the trilogy from the beginning. With his compelling characters, his vivid prose, and his exploration of universal themes, Winslow has produced a masterpiece of modern crime fiction. City in Ruins by Don Winslow runs 400 pages. It's available from HarperCollins, and it costs $32. This was a review titled Trilogy of Mobster Turned Tycoon Completed by Bruce DeSilva of the Associated Press. And here's another article from the Richmond Times-Dispatch Sunday, April 14th, Books and Authors page titled Quiet Time, Silent Book Clubs Offer Social Reading Without the Homework by Esme Jimenez of the Seattle Times. Outside of C&P Coffee in West Seattle, a couple sit cocooned in their winter coats, Christmas lights illuminating the cool night. A gentleman is wearing a gray fedora, black spectacles, midway down his nose, eyebrows bunched together. A woman to his right is wearing a blue knit hat, a curtain of silver hair peeking out beneath, gloved fingers clutching a book called The Origins of You. Down the road, till dawn, an arcade bar turns quiet as lights from the pinball machines and video games twinkle on. Dozens of people sit, necks crooked, over literature, drinks, and snacks scattered about. A woman walks into the nook, a motorcycle helmet tucked in her arm, a book bag in tow. "Is there room left?" she asks, eyeing where she can squeeze in among the two crowded floors of the cocktail bar. Up and down California Avenue, this is the scene on a Thursday at 7 p.m. This is the so-called introvert happy hour of the Silent Book Club of West Seattle, where people get together on the first Thursday of every month to simply and, you guessed it, silently read. The club is part of an international organization that leads these voluntary efforts to bring people together to read in real time. It was originally started in 2012 in San Francisco by two friends who similarly wanted the pleasure of a book club and its social aspect without the stress of keeping up with reading homework. Seattle and the Puget Sound region actually have 10 chapters, some of which we recently launched after the success of the West Seattle branch. It's largely women in attendance, and women read more than men, period, but that's starting to change. More men and queer folks are participating in the gatherings, and as they have grown, said Sarah Richards, one of three co-founders of the group. She said the club has also been intentional with finding family-friendly locations as well as places for people under 21, and even has partnered with a local library in December for a separate event. Part of the success has been the seasonal element, Richard says. While the club hosted an outdoor read at Seattle's Alki Beach this summer, there's something especially cozy about reading in the drizzly weather, hot drink in hand. I 100% believe that it's so supportive of people's mental health, Richard said. For the December event, 11 locations welcomed the group, wineries, Easy Street Records, cafes, and bars. The schedule for the night is simple. Show up around 7 p.m. or earlier if you're trying to find a good seat. Bring a book and maybe a friend, get a drink or food, and chat with others. The easiest icebreaker, of course, is what are you reading? Once the clock hits 7:30 p.m., a hush falls over the crowd. When you're there and when you experience being in a cocktail bar or wherever you end up, and then it just gets quiet, Richards said, the moment can be magical. At West Seattle grounds, it was so quiet the rustle of the pages could be heard. Dozens of readers, some wearing headphones, some holding e-readers, all dedicated themselves to a full 60 minutes immersed in their pages. Traveling to worlds of mystery or fiction, academic papers, zines, or classic novels. At CNP, even barista Edge Pollard noted that the incredible moment was a moment of silence. I wish that I wasn't working. I want to read with them, chuckled Pollard, pulling a book out of her bag, just in case. At 8:30 p.m., a few voices broke the spell, and a swell of noise rose back up. Hosts at each location gathered all the books people brought and took photos of the stacked piles, both as an inspiration for others to add to their reading lists and as a testament to the night. The piles included classics like Moby Dick and War and Peace, steamy books like A Court of Silver Flames, and romance holiday novels with titles like A Holly Jolly Ever After. Someone even brought a thick copy of Effective Project Management. Despite national surveys that indicate reading is steadily on the decline in America, in West Seattle, hundreds proved otherwise. Finding community in the calmest of places, reading alone together. This was a review titled Quiet Time, Silent Book Clubs Offer Social Reading Without the Homework by Esme Jimenez of the Seattle Times. And that's all the time we have for RTD Reviews this week. I'm Jennifer Faison for the Virginia Voice, and thank you for listening. This program is also available anytime on demand at www.virginiavoice.org.